And okay, I'm just gonna give it a whirl. I don't know if this is gonna freaking work. So you know what?
It says that it's recording.
Okay. All right. Well, if it's not, that would be bad. Hopefully it doesn't cost $20 to like record on Skype. Because that's where I draw the line. $20.
Yeah. $20. That's a lot. That's many meals.
I keep adjusting my microphone because I just interviewed somebody and my microphone was like way over here. And it sounds like I'm in the shower the whole time.
I love that for you.
Yeah. So we're living and we're learning. And I can't even really hear myself right now. Oh, Alyssa.
The audio quality on my end is nice. So.
Oh, good. Like, the audio, it's good for me too. Those iPhones, they get a good recording.
Thank you, God.
Thank you, God.
Because I ain't got time to be paying for self-tapes.
No. No. Which is a perfect segue, Alyssa. My friend, Alyssa Weninger. Alyssa, tell us who you are and what it is you do.
That's a lot to unpack. All right. No.
It is a lot.
Obviously, my name's Alyssa. I'm assuming we're going to... No, I'm just kidding. I'm an actor. Air quotes.
You're a trained actor.
I don't know. Like, what? What do I say?
You're a trained actor. You're also a dancer. And...
I'm a retired dancer.
Can you say that you worked at Disney?
Yes.
Please take it away.
I feel like an actor encompasses all of it. I grew up dancing. I just loved entertaining people. That's bullshit. Is this G-rated?
No.
Okay.
No, people have been swearing.
Because I swear.
You can swear. It's okay, Alyssa.
Perfect.
It's okay. It's totally fine. Also, okay. I'm not used to wearing these. I'm getting like a rash already. I'm wearing blue light glasses because I go to bed earlier.
I don't know what that's like. I'm actually going to take a nap because I had to wake up to be somewhere at 4 p.m. today.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, because you work during the night. Yeah. Probably you consider it a survival job.
Yes.
You're not working on set, but that, you're good at it.
My pay the bills. I teach English online. Children in China. China is 13 hours ahead of us right now because they don't observe daylight savings. So during daylight savings, they're 14 hours ahead of us. And then like right now, they're 13 hours ahead of us. So obviously the kids are taking classes like during the day for them, but it's overnight for us. Or if you teach during the week, which I do a couple of times, it's like really early morning. Like I have a class at 4 a.m. tomorrow.
Mm-mm.
Because it's evening for the kids and they're out of school. So that's how I pay my bills between acting gigs.
Which is few and far between for any actor right now because it's COVID.
Yeah, which... in some ways has been great, in some ways has been terrible. It's like great because the relief of like not working is not about me at all. Like,
yes,
the industry.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off, takes the self-loathing off a little bit. Like, why didn't I get this job? Something's right. Wrong with me. No, they probably couldn't even aren't even getting auditions right now because they're not in production because of the pandemic.
Dude, I have not been auditioning much, but again, it's been nice to like have a pandemic to blame it on. Even
yeah.
This year's typically slow though, because well, I guess it'd be industry opening back up again, but around the time we do polar auditions are pretty dead.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's very dead during Christmas holiday time, and usually it's like student. I'm like the student film junkie. Student films are ramping up right about now. There, yeah.
I never do them. I should. There's no reason not to.
Here's where this is describes our difference in our training, though. You actually are trained. You went to a very good acting school. You also worked even before then. You like have been a lifelong actor in a very like real way, doing plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. And throughout your life, working for Disney and all this stuff, like really being a working actor for a long time. And then going to conservatory, whereas I jumped into film after just doing basically musicals, like a few musicals here and there growing up. And right. I didn't know anything. So I threw myself into student films. And that's been a lot of my training is doing student films.
I think that's great experiences.
Sure.
Training by doing is really good. There are very good actors who left drama school because they, you know, booked an amazing job. And obviously, you're still going to learn how to act if you're on set.
Yeah, it's kind of sink or swim at that point.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's
sink
like
or swim.
There's like quite a famous person who went to RCS. And they only did like their first year and they dropped out because they booked.
Didn't Ewan McGregor go to RCS?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I know Robert Carlyle, David Tennant.
Okay.
Do you know the show with Gillian Anderson on Netflix, Sex Ed? Is that what it's called?
No, I do not.
Okay. Really good. I highly recommend it. There's an actor in that show called Shooty. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And I'm not sure about his last name, but he went to RCS. He graduated the year before I went. Like, he graduated in 2014.
Oh, okay.
All 2014. Whatever. Anyway, I think it's just as valid to learn through working as it is through conservatory or whatever training.
So I want to know a lot about your school.
Mm-hmm.
It's something literally foreign to me. And how do you feel? So what is it? What school did you go to? You know, what's the rundown? And like, what is the acronym? I don't even know what RCS stands for.
It's the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland.
Okay.
So that's
that. Yeah. Sounds so dope.
RCS, it was formerly the RSAMD, which is how many people will still know it. The Royal Scottish Academy for Music and Dramatic Arts. Like, that is when David Tennant graduated, it was still the RSAMD. The name change happened recently, like within the last 10 to 20 years. I don't remember.
Okay.
But it's because they have, it was music and drama, but they have ballet and they have production. Literally any creative job they have a degree for. So they changed the name to be more inclusive of other degrees.
I see. Yeah. Okay. It's pretty up there in terms of drama schools. Like, it's a pretty prestigious school.
Yeah, when I decided that I was going to go to drama school, I've always been a bit of an Anglophile. Like, I love the UK. I probably, because of Harry Potter growing up, I was just like, I'm going to do this. So when I was deciding that I was going to spend the astronomical amount of money to go to drama school anyway, I may as well look in the UK because I'm also obsessed with a lot of British actors. So kind of breaking down the difference and wanting to go to a British drama school just seemed to make sense. So I like Googled the top 10 drama schools in the UK because I only knew about like Lambda and RADA, which like everyone knows Lambda is the London Academy for Music and Dramatic Arts, and RADA is the Royal Academy for Dramatic Arts. And they're both in London. So I knew about those. And then, yeah, RCS came in to that list somewhere. So I decided to audition for Lambda, RADA, and RCS, which is in, RCS is in Glasgow in Scotland, which is like 4-hour train ride north of London. I auditioned in New York City for all of the schools. I did not have to go over to the UK. Lambda and RADA at the time, so this was like 2012, 2013, they did have callbacks that you had to attend in England. But I'd already gotten into RCS, and my audition for RCS, I just knew after that that was the school that I wanted to go to. Like, if I got into RCS, that's the one I wanted to go to. I just felt, like it fit. If that makes sense.
Definitely. It is a fit thing. And it sounds so cute. I mean, being in Scotland, I have always been obsessed with Scotland. And I've never been. I love Scottish music. I've always been obsessed with Scotland because I love Scottish reel. And I just love that music so much. And I've been really obsessed with going there, but I've never been there. And so when you told me when I first met you, because we met on the Polar Express train ride, New Orleans. We met doing that show, and it's basically, in case anyone was wondering, it's the Polar Express, the movie, live version on a train. We do, yep,
train.
It's the movie on a train, on a moving train, and it's basically, well, Scott, our director, called it Broadway on a train, and it kind of was. It was very intense. I've never worked on Broadway, so it might be an insult to those people, but I don't care. Because it was very intense, and the shows were like 50 minutes long, 46 minutes.
50.
And we would do like some days 3 shows a day, some shows 6 shows a day. Yeah. And yeah.
I mean, I would say that Polar's tough. It's a really difficult schedule.
It is a difficult schedule.
So people on Broadway shouldn't be offended because... It's not that what you do on Broadway is not hard. They're just, you know, different protections.
It's on par with the level of maybe with the hours that we put in and the toll it takes on our bodies, especially.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's more than anyone I know. Like, I have a friend who did Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in London, and she never had the number of shows that we did in a day. Like, that's quite rare to do as many shows as we do in one day.
6 shows. It was a lot. Yeah, we had 6.
It was the max.
And that was the max, and that was, like, the whole month of December that that's what we did. And so we got pretty close, and everybody on the train would get close. And this past year, we had a bigger group, so it was a little more spread out. And I think it was, people definitely bonded, but it wasn't quite the same because it was more spread out and all that jazz. But I don't remember why this came up. Oh, talking about Scotland.
Yeah.
When we first met, it was one of the first things I learned about you was that you went to Scotland for school. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I want to go so bad. And so... How was even just living in Scotland in general?
I didn't know shit about Scotland. Like, I had very general knowledge of the UK. I had never left the country when I moved. So I got my passport because I got into this drama school. You know, a lot of Americans don't have passports. And I got on a plane to move, and that was the first time I left the country. I packed up all my shit and was going to Glasgow for the first time. I had never been to Glasgow, didn't know anything about Glasgow, didn't know anyone in Glasgow. Thankfully, the school has, like, they set up, like, official, like, Facebook pages, and they have it for freshers, which is what they call incoming freshmen. You have freshers, and there's, like, freshers week, and it's just a bunch of events at, like, bars and shit, because the drinking age is 18, so most people starting college can drink. But they also, like, offer this thing where you can get a buddy to pick you up at the airport, and people, like, sign up to be buddies for each program. But I had, like, finance issues. I almost didn't get to go because getting the money together was a whole thing. So I missed the chance for all of that. And I happened to meet a girl on Facebook who was in third year when I was starting. Her name is Amy. She's actually doing really well for herself right now. She's on a British soap. And she offered to come pick me up from the airport and drive me to my flat. Like, I have no idea what to do. Like, when I get there, are there going to be buses? Are there going to be taxis? There's dead ass a bus that goes from the airport into Glasgow. It's cheap as hell and easy as hell. Do that if you ever go. So I was super excited. I love Scotland. I want to go back. I would move back to Scotland in a heartbeat, no questions asked. It was amazing. And I lived in Glasgow the entire time. So I am partial to Glasgow. I know a lot of people prefer Edinburgh, but I love Glasgow. Glasgow's less touristy, I feel, than Edinburgh. There are tourists, obviously, in Glasgow, but it,
I don't know. Homey.
Yeah, Edinburgh has the castle, and it's just, which is awesome. Like, as an American, seeing a real castle, obviously, is just kind of what.
All right, so what is the biggest difference between, like, Scotland and the United States? I mean, you might have a laundry list, but what are some things that, like, you definitely would point out?
So, popular American opinion, I felt a lot safer.
Really?
I did not fear mass shootings. That's such a terrible thing to laugh about. God, I'm horrible. Anyway, yeah, I obviously, shootings are quite a prevalent thing here sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I definitely get bad anxiety about it, like in the movie theater or whatever. But when I go to the cinema in Glasgow, like, no one's gonna come in here with a gun. I'm fine.
Well, the town that I live in now, Lafayette, mm-hmm. had a shooting in a movie theater.
Yes. That was during the Batman film, right?
Was it Trainwreck?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, and I remember looking it up one time and realizing, oh my gosh, this happened here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dang, that is really crazy. Yeah, it's everywhere. So you felt safer. Was the culture different in terms of how people interact or, like, socially?
Yeah. Glasgow's quite friendly, though. It feels like the south of the UK. So, like, the day that I got there, Amy drove me to my flat, and, you know, I got all my bags upstairs, whatever. But I didn't bring certain things, like towels. I decided that I was going to buy them over there because it's so expensive to bring shit from one country to the other that it was just cheaper to, like, purchase bedding and towels over there. So I got there and needed to go, and I lived in the West End at this time by Glasgow University. Super freaking beautiful. Looks like Hogwarts. It's beautiful area. There's a street called Ashton Lane that has, like, tea lights strung across the whole street, and there's just, like, bars and a cinema. And
wow.
Glasgow. So nice. So we walked. Me and my roommate, one of my roommates, I was with eight people my first year there, this guy Tanwin, who's English, so he had not ever spent much time in Glasgow, if any at all. Him and I walked in to the city center. I didn't have a working cell phone yet because I still had my U.S. SIM card. And obviously, it's, like, astronomically expensive to use your cell phone in another country. He also did not have a cell phone for whatever reason. I don't understand why he wouldn't have had one, but he didn't. We go to the store, get all of our shit, and we're, like, walking back home, and we can't remember how to get back home. And so we're talking, and we're obviously lost, and, you know, someone, like, on the street just, like, overheard us and put our address into their phone and, like, showed us how to get there. Like, people are really kind and friendly in Glasgow, I think, in a way that mirrors what it's like to live in the south of the U.S.
When you were there, how many Americans were in the program?
Okay, so every year they take 12 boys and 12 girls.
That is not a lot. But holy crap.
The program that I did, which is the BA acting. So there are 24 people every year. In my year, we had two Americans who actually grew up and live in America. And then we had another person. They actually, I don't know what the word is for this, because he's more than a dual citizen. They have three passports: Ireland, the States, and France.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure hers is Republic of Ireland, Ireland.
Okay.
I don't think she has a UK passport. And they came from France. I think they'd been living in France.
Okay.
Oh, but they did spend some time in the States. So two or three, depending on how you look at that in my year. So there's
probably, okay,
I don't know, maybe six or seven of us across all 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah, acting. Obviously, there's like musical theater and a host of other degrees.
And you auditioned in New York, and that's where you met Preston, who also did the Polar Express, right?
So, no, I met Preston because in my third year, so my final year of the program, because all British bachelor degrees are 3-year programs. Okay. It's a 4-year program. And their master's degrees are often 1-year programs. So he came to do his MA in musical theater, and it was my final year of my BA in acting. So the American students who are on the BA acting, BA musical theater, MA acting, and MA musical theater do a showcase in New York City all together. So it's people you typically wouldn't work with. You don't do shows with them at RCS, but you do a showcase with them. So he was in my U.S. showcase in my final year. So that's why I met and knew Preston. We did that showcase together. Yeah, we graduated in 2017, and then that was 2018. He came to New Orleans and was doing the Polar Express, and he's from up north. Like,
that is so strange.
Yeah, the world is
talk small. About a small world. That's freaking crazy.
I had that guy in my year who's from Metairie.
What?
Like, and I had never met him, so I am a little bit older. Adler was 18 and I was 22. I was 22 when I started. So he is a bit younger than I am, but we have mutual friends and we had never met. And then during one of the freshers events at some bar, I was, you know, telling someone that I was from New Orleans and they were like, "That's from Louisiana, right?" And I was like, "Yes." And they're like, "There's someone else in our year who's from Louisiana." And I was like, "What?" And so I'm dead ass thinking like they're going to be from Shreveport or something.
Right.
Okay, because what are the chances of two people from New Orleans? And so they brought me to him and I was like, "Hi, my name's Alyssa. I hear you're from Louisiana." And he was like, yeah, I am." And I was like, "Oh, cool." And I was like, "What part of Louisiana are you from?" And he was like, "New Orleans." And I was like, no, really, where are you from?" And he was like, "Metairie."
You're right.
I'm from Destrehan. What the hell? So yeah, we grew up like 15 minutes apart from each other, but met in Glasgow.
And he was in your year or wasn't?
He was in my year.
That is really crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. What?
Yeah.
I want to ask these things for people who are like me, who didn't go to conservatory for acting or even, you know, whatever. And also drawing based on, I went to music school. So there's got to be some similarities in the mindset that comes with graduating from a conservatory is kind of a thing, I think. Mm-hmm. And also people who are thinking about going back to school or something. So does this school teach specific acting schools of thought, or what is their, or do they teach everything just in terms of character work or movement or speech is kind of where I'm going with that.
So the acting program at RCS, obviously it's constantly evolving.
Okay.
The industry evolves. So the things that I did may already be different to what they do now.
Okay.
Obviously with COVID, things are going to be different. So but that's a good thing about their program.
Okay.
To change with the times. At RCS, the acting program, there are...
Alyssa's plugging her computer in so that she can keep talking to me. It's really nice.
And all of my things that I couldn't get. I'm red. And do you see my face? The exertion that I just took. That's ridiculous.
Took a lot of exertion.
Okay. So, yeah, the three big areas of study that you focus on RCS are acting, movement, and voice. Voice on the acting program included dialect work, singing. They teach the Nadine George technique for vocal support, just in regular life and acting. I don't know anyone from the U.S. who would know what Nadine George is. She is British. She actually came and did a workshop with us at school, so that was kind of cool. It's just about accessing different parts of your voice that you maybe don't regularly use, and not worrying about what things sound like, and using proper breath support and diaphragm support so you're not damaging your vocal cords, because if you're doing six shows a day, you need to be nice to your voice. Dialect, regular, singing. I hated singing. I hated having to sing. Yeah, movement. We did mostly Lecoq. Our tutors went to the Lecoq school in Paris. So that was a lot of my movement training. And then acting classes, they do a little mashup of everything.
Okay. And
take what works for you.
Okay.
RCS's thought process at the time that I was there is to show you all these tools and all these different ways to approach things, and you decide what suits you, what works well for you. They're trying to kind of giving you a basket of tools to take with you. And the other really great thing that RCS does is in second year, you do this thing called On the Verge. And On the Verge is new work. So you, in the acting program, we had to pitch and write shows. They're very big about the fact that they're also very realistic about the fact that you'll probably never be a working actor. So making your own work is an important part of their course, which, while I sort of hated it at the time, I am now glad that I have the experience, because it gives me the false confidence to make shit now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was hard for me, because I had a really weird relationship with being an actor growing up, because I was always really good academically in school. So I was always pushed towards STEM stuff, because I'm really good at math and science. And because I'm so right-brained, right? That's
Supposedly creative, yeah.
Oh, no. Left brain? Not creative.
Left brain.
That's what I grew up thinking that I was. And I had this impression that actors weren't creative because we're given everything, you know. We're given the words to say. We're given the costumes to wear. We're told where to stand. Like,
I really do see where you think that, because more than in music, with actors, it's a different breed, because the really good actors are good researchers. They're good at, like, remembering information. You know, it's memorizing. It's history. It's a very technical thing. And music is too, but it's a lot more, like, you have to be a feeler. I mean, you do with acting too. You have to be in touch with your emotions, obviously. But if you don't know what you're saying, it's not going to work. And you have to be kind of, you have to be a good reader to be an actor. You have to be like, yeah.
Well, that's why I just didn't consider myself a creative person, which, like, looking back, is stupid as hell. Like, actors are creative people. I mean, it's oftentimes why actors become producers, to have more creative control, because actors are kind of bottom of the barrel when it comes to creative control. Having to make a show in my second year, though, like, helped me really get in touch with the fact that, like, oh, I am creative. Like, even the fact that I grew up dancing and, like, choreographing dance, like, that's creative, you know?
Yes.
Just not having such a narrow view of what art and creativity is. And I just think that's because of, like, the area that I grew up in. And again, naturally kind of being good at STEM subjects and getting pushed towards that, I think, is why I kind of had such a narrow view of creativity and art.
Yeah. And once people around you say something to you, you remember it. And I think you might, as a kid, I think we put ourselves into boxes a little bit. Like, I remember, I just talked to my Nana, actually, and I always thought I was a really hyper kid because my friends were goofy. And so I was hyper around them, and I was a very, like, ADD kid. But my Nana was like, you weren't hyper at all. You were very mellow. And it made me realize that, like, I've been basically telling myself that I'm this crazy person.
Right.
And I really am quite mellow. And have been.
It's crazy how much we take on other people's views of us, even though that's not our responsibility. And it's not our responsibility to live up to someone's views of us.
Yes. And we can have parts of ourselves that, yeah, maybe I'm hyper in this setting and maybe I'm mellow in other settings. It's different sides. Or maybe you are super left brain, but you're also super creative. You can be both.
They go hand in hand.
They do go hand in hand.
Very creative people are also very intelligent people, or very intelligent people are also very creative people. Because if you think about science, you need to be creative to, like,
you do
apply these rules or figure out the rules in the first place. Many doctors that I've talked to are, like, really passionate about art, like acting. Or the show that I wrote when I was in my second year was about childhood cancer. And I got to talk to this, like, top pediatric oncologist in London. We essentially were making phone calls, like, trying to interview people for the show, because I was doing a verbatim show. So everything that was said in my show was actually said by somebody in an interview.
Oh, wow.
And so we were making phone calls, like, asking people, like, are you willing to be interviewed for this? This is what I'm doing. I'm a second year student at RCS, and I'm making a show, da 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 da. And this, like, top pediatric oncologist in London called us back because he's like, I'm very passionate about the arts. I donate to, like, this theater. I would love to be a part of this project. And I was like, thank you, sir. He talked with me for, like, an hour and a half, too. It was great.
Holy cow. That's awesome.
So I see that a lot, that crossover a lot. And I feel like I really struggled with that as a kid. And I really struggled with feeling invalidated as an actor just because I was good at STEM. So to any
young people out there, I say do what you love, not what you're being pushed to do. And I do think being good at math and science can also go hand in hand with being an artist. So let's not pigeonhole ourselves too early. But.
Absolutely. I think that's really good advice. It's such a prestigious school, and I'm asking you this because I deal with this, and I went to music school, and it has definitely completely changed my view of being a musician, and I'm wondering if it has impacted what you thought acting was, what has it hindered anything emotionally for you? I mean, because I don't want to go into what I'm thinking of. I kind of just want to hear your spicy hot take on it.
So I find drama school to be interesting.
The face you made.
I'm trying to word this without like jaded or like.
Uh-huh.
So the thing about drama school, right, is like you constantly confront the things you're bad at.
Yes.
And I think in this industry already, it's very easy to be hyper critical of yourself. And sometimes we would do things in school that was really challenging or what have you. And maybe it wasn't always the best environment to do that in. But that's not necessarily from the school. We had issues amongst people in our year. My year actually had a talking to, I think in my second year, about bullying and the amount of bullies in the year, sort of. And it defeats the purpose of being at drama school if people are scared to put themselves out there. Because that's the point. It's meant to be a safe space to make mistakes, like try shit, be crazy, do whatever, go as big as you want. And if you don't feel safe to do that, then you're not getting the full experience. And so there definitely was some of that, like feeling insecure because people maybe weren't as supportive as they should have been. There's also a really interesting dynamic of being American in a British drama school. I think we had to work harder to prove ourselves to our fellow classmates. And in turn, sometimes I think we felt like we needed to work harder to prove ourselves to our tutors. But whether that was actually the case or our perception is, you know, a whole other thing. I would 1,000 times over do drama school again. I'm heavily considering going to get a master's in a similar program, but doing one in the U.S. Because overall, I think I grew so much, even from the things that maybe were really, really difficult. I'm a completely different person than I was before drama school. And not all of it has to do with me being a completely different actor. Like, I am a different person for those
experiences. Yeah, the experience, the life experience it was.
Yeah. Absolutely. The acting experience was great. The life experience was better. And I also think that since, as Americans, we don't often travel out of the country, that's a luxury that many Americans cannot afford. I highly recommend looking into doing a semester abroad or going to school abroad. It's cheaper, much cheaper. My drama school was way cheaper than if I would have gone to NYU Tisch, which is like on par with RCS over there. My tuition was only like $20,000 a year.
Wow. And
60 or something.
Yeah. In New York, that I was just talking to my other friend who lived there too. It's really expensive to live there in New York.
Yeah. It's kind of like going to drama school in London. London's really expensive. Glasgow's not. Glasgow's great.
What was the group? Were you with a group when you auditioned, or did you just like, because you didn't go to traditional, or you did go to traditional college before that briefly or something?
Yes. I went for a year.
Okay. And then you just went to the audition in New York. Where did you go with anyone, or did you go with a group, or what?
So my RCS audition, I was in New York by myself. My very first drama school audition, Tanae actually came with me to New York.
Wow.
It was like in October. So she came, and then I did that audition. But then all of my subsequent auditions, I went by myself. I went to New York like 4 or 5 times that year.
Oh, my God. And did you take, you took acting classes before that?
Yes.
I mean, obviously.
So I started doing theater when I was in 3rd grade at school. I was in the talented theater program.
Oh, that's right. They don't have that all over the country. Yeah, they
have that everywhere. So where I grew up, we have gifted and talented. So gifted is for gifted children. I hate that word. Anyway, you know, if you're like advanced, you get put in the gifted classes.
Yes.
English, math, you take a test, they put you in. Then there's talented. They have talented art, talented music, talented drama. You have to go to the school board to audition and get put into the program. And then you're evaluated, whatever. Every year you have like an IEP.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I started doing that because I had like a little class play or whatever in like the 2nd grade. And they put me on a microphone and I obviously ate that shit up. I had already done before. I've always been like, this is a little tangent, I'm sorry, but my grandmother had a video camcorder, like one of those big fuck off ones, right? I was born in 1992, so this was like 95. And her camcorder could do this split thing where it made you look like twins.
Oh, heck yes.
Mary Kate and Ashley's entire Our First Video.
Wait, what? Wait, say that again. Say that again so I get the audio clear.
So my grandma's camera had a split function, and it looked like there were two of me. So I reenacted the entirety of Mary-Kate and Ashley's Our First Video. I was Kate, and I was Ashley.
Oh, that is kind of like, that is when you know. That was the moment.
It's been like, I just always, I used to make my cousins do Grease with me for our family. Like
Grease, what a choice.
I was obsessed with Grease. Like, I don't know. I always made people sit down and watch me do stuff, which is funny to like kind of look back. And obviously acting was always such a big part of my life, but for so long, I didn't think it was a viable career opportunity.
And yes, I had a similar experience.
Yeah.
Where I would make people watch me do stuff.
And it, apparently, you know, not everyone wants that.
Yeah, and apparently not everyone does that either.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Because, anyway,
yeah.
I don't remember why I got onto that tangent. I'm sorry.
Well, because we were talking about your experience before you went to RCS, and it also reminded me that, okay, so you did talented theater, and that is something for anyone listening who doesn't quite understand, it's really not everywhere. Like, the reason why I'm so into this is because I taught talented theater. I had no clue what I was doing at first because I didn't grow up with that. We had like the talented and gifted, which is basically, it was similar to like a STEM program where kids went to their own school. They left their schools and they went to a special school and they learned there. And so, but the music, the arts was not included in that. And it's a one-on-one thing or a small group thing, right? You were with a small group?
Yeah, it's pretty small because it's not like a yearly school play where anyone can audition.
Right.
You have to make it into the talented program.
Yeah, you have to audition. There's you like learn a monologue. These days in St. Francisville, they had to learn a monologue and answer some. They were basically interviewed type of thing.
We had to do some improv, I remember. I don't know if they still do that, but I had to do improv.
I think they did. I don't remember.
like 7 or 8, but they gave me like a blanket and they were like,
what are you gonna
can with this in a minute? And so I had a minute and I was like, it's a cape, it's a magic carpet, it's an umbrella. Like,
yeah.
I remember they gave me scenario. Oh my God, this vivid childhood memory that I just recovered. They gave me this scenario where I wanted something from my mom and I wasn't getting it. And I played it as a friend of mine at the time. I'm not going to say her name, but I played it the way that she talks to her parents. And they were like, do you talk to your parents like that? And I was like, absolutely not.
You're like embarrassed. Like, don't tell my mom.
No, I wasn't. I was like, tell my mom. I'm nice. I would never.
Oh.
Also, I'm going to beat me into the middle of next week. I'm just kidding. My mom's not abusive.
No, your mom's so sweet.
Act talk.
Yeah, my parents were the same. They did not tolerate. Did your career goals, or I guess career, I don't really like the word career goals, but for lack of better term, did your career goals change after you went?
No, I think I'd already decided at that point that like my ultimate goal is to just be a working actor. I would love to not need a survival job.
Yeah.
I know the odds of that are not always in our favor, but it's way more favorable than being like a celebrity or something, which I also think like if you're in this industry just to be famous, this is not it.
Oh.
Most. Yeah. Not, no.
It's,
you know,
not a sustainable.
Yeah.
Or very rewarding path.
Yeah. So I think no, it didn't change.
Okay.
And the good thing about RCS, they're brutally honest about the difficulty of living as an actor, as someone doing.
Okay. So you from the jump wanted to do anything acting. Am I getting that correct? So like theater or film, you just wanted to do anything. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
I just thoroughly enjoy being somebody else. And anytime I go a long time without doing a certain medium, I always am very ready to do that medium. Like, I really, really want to do a play. Because obviously I haven't done any sort of live thing since Polar last year. Oh, well, and with Corona. Who
knows? Oh, that has been really hard. Yeah, I was just talking to Jeff today about murder mystery because I would do that like on the off times. Mm-hmm. Murder mystery is like a dinner theater thing and it's a traveling troupe and it's pretty low key, but you know, it's costumes and lots of lines and characters and it's a troupe. So it's the same people working with each other. And boy, I don't think I realized how much I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the camaraderie, the group, the just interacting with other human beings.
And being around other people who, like, understand. Because I feel like it can be very lonely being any type of artist if your family are not, which typically is the case.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Yeah. It's such a difficult industry and such a unique kind of life-lived experience that you almost always instantly connect with other people who do this. It's like this kinship of struggle.
Yes, film definitely can be isolating, I think even more so because you don't have to interact with people if you don't want to in between.
Yeah. And even, I mean, even when you're working, you know, there's a lot of time, downtime, maybe in your trailer. And if you're like brought in as a guest on a series, while no one may be mean or anything, it's just they're like already an established group and you're only here for a few days and you don't want to step on anyone's toes or, you know.
Yeah, you kind of know your place.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to observe. And then obviously with even working on shows, I still find it so different than theater. Theater's so long. It's such a long process from audition to staging the show. And I feel like film's kind of the opposite. It's all really fast.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of the work on your own.
Yes.
For, like, your character.
That's so true. Whereas the theater, I mean, you're shaped a lot by the other people.
Yeah, because the rehearsal, you have so much.
Right. You're working with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I think you can see the difference sometimes on film. Not always, but you can see when the cast is kind of disjointed like that sometimes. And like maybe, and I think it's only obvious when you have just, when you watch things that are very cohesive and you can tell people are like gelling.
Right. When you get that magic.
Yes. Like shows that have been on the air for a really long time, or like a movie that you can just tell, like, they were cast partially maybe because they all kind of just gel as people, maybe? I don't know. I'm just kind of making stuff up.
No, I mean, that's part of the RCS audition process, is they do consider, like, these personalities. It's not just about your talent. It's personalities of the people that you're working with, and they very much told us that when we were auditioning, it's going to be similar. That is a big part of something that has to be taken into account. It's intense to work on any acting project, film, theater, whatever. So, like, am I going to get along with this person? Does this person seem like they're easy to work with? Which is why I used to panic in auditions pre-training when they would ask me to do it again and to try it this way, because I thought that was like an insult to the choice that I had made. And now I know that that is not it at all. It's very much them seeing if you can take direction.
Yeah. And they like are it's a collaborative thing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I totally am with you though. Like even still, if somebody gives me a note, I'm like immediately think, why didn't I read that like this? Like, what's wrong with me? Of course, of course.
But then that's the whole point of acting, though. They want you and, like, your take on it, or they don't. That's another thing that's, like, I've been really working on coming to terms with. It's not, you're not competing with other people, because it's not what it's about at the end of the day. Like, I will never have your lived life experiences. So what you bring into one role, I would come at it from a totally different angle. And I've seen this with auditions. Like if a friend and I have auditioned for the same thing and we send them to each other afterwards, and totally different approaches.
Oh, totally.
To the same material. And that's just, you know, we have different lives. So you can't compete. You can't feel like, they must have done better than me. Like, no, it's just they're different.
I only have one more question for you. And it's, what's something that you've learned or experienced in really anything that you take with you and you'd want to share with the world?
That's good. I think with life, a good thing is knowing that you are not responsible for people's expectations of you. Meaning, like, in some ways, women are expected to always be happy and comforting and caretakers or whatever. And so anytime a woman kind of gets angry or, like, is stern and puts her foot down, people automatically are like, you're a bitch. And it's not because you're a bitch. It's because of our societal expectations of women. So that's what I mean, like, by people's expectations of you. Just because someone thinks something of you does not mean that that's what you are or what you have to be at all.
I really love that.
I'd be trying to work on myself. I feel like the best thing that has helped me cope with the astronomical amount of rejection as an actor is that it really is not about me. It's not a testament to your talent. It's not a testament to your work ethic. you still have value as a person and as an artist, whether you are working or whether you are not working. That's not something we can control. All you can do is do your work, bring your best effort on that day. The other thing, it changes day by day because we are humans, and that's okay. Yeah, I'm really working on trying not to tie my self-value, my self-worth, into whether or not I'm working as an actor at that moment. And I think that can be really difficult for a lot of artists if they're not working or successful in their, it's really easy to feel like you're completely worthless as a human.
Yes.
But that's only part of us.
Or busyness in general, doing like things.
Disease, that's a cultural difference. Not to jump back six conversations ago, but that is a huge cultural difference. I really, really, really struggled with coming to terms with all this. In drama school in the UK, they talk about the thing that they love about American actors is that we're always very prepared because there's so many of us and you have to be on top of your shit or else the person behind you who is on top of their shit is going to get it. And in the UK, they're way more relaxed. It was amazing. It was everything I needed as an actor to like just chill, just calm down and enjoy it. This is fun. I'm not curing cancer. I'm acting. So there's like a much more relaxed approach to everything, not everything being so serious. And I was working at a restaurant in my third year. And after like 6 months at the restaurant, I had accrued a week of paid vacation and some personal stuff had happened. So I needed to call out of work. And when I called my manager and I was like kind of explaining to her what was going on, she was like, you have a week of paid vacation, so I'll just put that through for this week and pull you off the schedule. And so I started crying on the phone. She was, what's wrong? And I was like, I've never had a paid vacation in my life. I was 25 years old. And I had a full-time job since I was 18. And I've never had a paid vacation. And she was like,
Honestly, it brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah. The capitalist cog machine that we are in this country, it's sad. Like, I'm not just here to pay bills, be skinny, and die. Like, we need more work-life balance in this country, for sure. We praise people who are overworked too much. Like, working 80 hours a week is not good, but it's so valued in our society as, like, oh, that's amazing. Or if someone has to work two jobs to support themselves and they're doing it, people are like, that's great. It's not great. We're literally killing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have studies about productivity and how a four-day work week yields the same results as a five-day work week. So why are we not doing 4 days? Why don't we get mandatory vacation? Because it does seem like a major conflict of interest for your corporation to choose how much vacation time you get. Of course they don't want to go on vacation. They're going to lose money. Like, what? That was a very, very big cultural difference that I think I needed. That was very type A.
I think, yes, yeah. Well, when you describe your type A-ness, and even people who are, like, I've never considered myself type A, but I have other qualities that, like, I could benefit from that in terms of just, like, I've always felt like not enough being so, I always struggled in school. It was kind of the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I was stressed all the time and always had this guilt that I wasn't doing enough. And I just didn't like certain things. I just only liked music.
Valid as hell, but interesting. I always felt inadequate and like I wasn't enough.
Right.
I still struggle with that sometimes. Yeah. Like, should I be doing more? Also, I now have a chronic illness that has been quite debilitating / life changing for the minute. And it's I'm really grappling with the fact that I am not able-bodied anymore, or able to work, you know, a 60-hour work week. Like, that's just physically not in the cards for me right now. And because of where we live, our value is so tied into how much we can or cannot work that that's been a big struggle. But disabled people are valid people. Chronically ill people are valid people. You know, we're all out here just trying to do our best.
Yeah.
I feel like we should place more value on that in our society than we currently do.
I'm going to leave everyone with that. Mic dropped by Alyssa. Even though she's not holding a microphone, she's holding a mysterious water bottle.
Yes. It's, wait, look how cool. Let's see.